weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to JJ Hartigan. It's Monday, the 2nd of March, and this is Game On. Coming up today, there's only one place to start.
After 10 incredible rounds here at Madison Square Garden, we go to the judges' score totals, and they read as follows. Benoit Roussel, 96-94, Amanda Serrano. Glenn Feldman, 97-93, Katie Taylor. And Judge Guido Cavallari scores this bout 96-93 for your winner by split decision. And still, it's the Katie undisputed Taylor. Lightweight
a split
champion
decision
of the world,
over Amanda Serrano. And he's crying out, come on, come on. And every Irish fan in attendance here at Madison Square Garden is up on their feet.
Well, one fan I'm looking at here is up on her feet still after being in Madison Square Garden. But we also have Alan Colley on soccer and the snooker, Barry Call and Niall Moran on the weekend's GAA. And if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Summary, there's no point in talking about the fight. We all watched the fight, the whole lot. What about the after party?
Well, now, the after party was pretty epic. It was, we just had the best weekend. So I think everybody who's been listening to Game On for the last while will have heard me going on and on and on about the fact that I was heading over to Katie Taylor and nobody wanted to give me any hop, paid me zero attention. Well, after the fight, my phone was going bananas. Everybody wants to come the next time. Well, there's no more seats on the bandwagon, lads. If you didn't come to the first fight in New York City, you're not coming. The whole thing, though, like, it was absolutely amazing. I only got back this morning, but it was just a whirlwind. But she's incredible. Like, she was... She just blew our minds. And I, like, Ali, you go to football fans or to football matches, Ruby, I'm sure you've been emotional at times. I've often gone to games and watched games on the telly and seen people crying and not really got it, you know. I was like, what's wrong with them? Like, you know, it's just a game. Well, the national anthem came and I swear to God, the emotion was just unbelievable. There's the crowd, and in fairness, it was 50-50. There was a huge amount of Puerto Rican fans there as well. And they were amazing. Like, they were singing just as loud as we were. There was just as many of them there. But the atmosphere, because they were singing and we were singing, it was electric. It was all so good-natured, like men, women, just everything, like everything about the night. And then obviously the fight, like, you know, we were giving it loads for the first couple of rounds, third round, still giving it loads. Fifth round, just absolute shock. Like, we just couldn't believe it. When she was obviously getting bruised and battered, and we're looking at the clock, still 20 seconds in that round, and it was the slowest 20 seconds of my life, because as everyone who watched it will saw, her knees were gone, you could see it in her face. The Puerto Ricans were just, they were lifting the seats out of the stadium because they knew that was the moment. Like, so they got behind Serrano, like, unbelievably. And like, we couldn't do or say anything because it was absolute shock. Like, nobody saw it coming, and the 2 minute rounds, now it was over like pretty quickly, but just phenomenal, like, phenomenal.
So then that's 5, 6, 7, and she finds her feet and starts to go again. Yeah. What was the atmosphere like then?
Well, like, six wasn't great. Now, everybody was kind of picking themselves up and trying to process it because it happened so quickly. 2 minute rounds, you're trying to process what's going to happen next. Like, you know, you're trying to figure out, like, what could the score be? What does she need to do? Does she still have a chance? And you've all these emotions going through you because you've gone from having this high
and
of being
great
excited.
At maths anyway, like.
Yeah, exactly. To this, like, low of not knowing if she was going to actually do this. And she started to settle then, but then come kind of the ninth round, you knew then, like, this was in the balance, and the Puerto Rican fans knew that it was in the balance for them too. So it was like everybody there felt they had to shout louder than each other. So it was just absolute mayhem. Like, everybody was shouting at the top of their voices. It almost became a competition. It was like, well, whoever shouts louder now is going to win this fight. That's what it felt like. And people just went crazy. And then when she won, like, because she didn't know either, and you could see it in her, like, and nobody knew who was going to win. Like, nobody had a clue. And, you know, you get the odd text, or, you know, you'd get people saying, you know, commentary saying it's all Serrano, and like, there's complete fear and worry. And then when the announcement came, It's just...
That's what I mean. Like, so the announcement comes, split decision. First judge, Serrano. Second judge, Taylor. You said the 20 seconds at the end of the fifth round felt like forever. What did waiting for that announcement feel like?
It was hell. Like, I don't know how people do that all the time, because, again, it just felt so long. And you're looking at her face. Like, it was just... Like,
so had Jean no sense? You
no
said
sense.
There that there was texts coming through from people
we
listening
no
to
sense.
Commentators. So when you're in the arena, you're not getting that, obviously.
No.
And had Jean, did Jean literally think this is going 50-50?
Could go anyway. We hadn't got a clue. And, you know, it took a while for them to bring the decision. So you're trying to discuss it between ourselves. And obviously none of us are, like, you know, boxing experts. So, you know, the views were so varying, like, you know, we were trying to count up the rounds. We had no clue, like, you know.
But for that 3 minutes, you were boxing experts.
We were.
I could only imagine the shot.
Yeah, we really were. And then, like, as it kind of got closer and closer, then, you know, it started to get more tense, and you could see the two women were trying to figure it out themselves. They were getting a little bit agitated. But sure, when they said Katie, then it was absolutely bananas. Like, that's the only way to describe it. I've never felt a high like it. Like, just because, you know, usually in a game, a goal comes and it's so, you know, it's like a few seconds of that instant emotion. And often with goals, you're anticipating it because the flow of the play. But when you're just waiting for someone to tell you a result, like, it's
but
just...
you have the final whistle in a match and you know the score.
Exactly.
Unless you're waiting for extra time or penalties. Same in most sports. When they get to the end, there's a winner. Here there's not. It was like a photo finish in racing, or you're waiting for a split decision, and then there's the pressure and the intensity.
And you're surrounded by 20,000 people who are so emotional, and it was so hot in there, and like, you're all just focused on these two girls standing in the middle of a ring who haven't got a clue either. Like, I'm telling you.
I'm trying to add up here as you're speaking, Marie. I think I know you over, it's over 20 years at this stage, and... Obviously, over the years, you're at...
You know me since I'm one now, yeah.
You're at sport, week in, week out, matches, different matches, bringing kids here, there and everywhere, watching matches. I've never seen you with a reaction like this to an event.
I've never reacted like it to an event. Honestly, I used to think people who cried at football matches were crazy. I actually, when they announced it, the girl beside me, she wasn't even in our party. I didn't even know her. And I just gave her the biggest hug ever and was jumping up and down because my friend was hugging someone else. You know what I mean? So it was like there was just no boundaries. Everybody went crazy, jumping up, screaming. It was almost like one of those out-of-body experiences because I don't behave like that. So I was like, when it calmed down, I was like, what just happened there? Like, I just completely lost my mind. When people go, I was gone, I never really understood what they meant by that. But when she won, I was like jumping up and down, roaring, screaming, like, you know, the world was going to end, stuff like.
How long were you
so who's coming
in
with
the
me
arena?
For the rematch?
How long were you in the arena after the fight then?
We hung around probably for about 25-30 minutes just singing, and, you know, took her a while to get out, so everybody, you know, sang her out of the arena and stuff like that. And now the Puerto Rican fans were brilliant, and then obviously Amanda Serrano gave her interview as well, and she was so gracious, and she was celebrating women's sport as well. And, you know, I was there with a group of women, so you kind of took a moment as well just to appreciate that, because, like, you know, even just from a pure journalism point of view, seeing over the last 15, 20 years, the landscape change for women's sport, from there being, like, obviously no boxing for women and very little coverage of women's sport and very little equality of opportunity, to that is phenomenal progress. And a lot of the women that were around were people that I'd have, you know, experienced a lot of things, would have interviewed along the way, were involved in different working organisations, sports people themselves, you know, all that. And there was an awful lot of women and girls over there like that as well, who'd be playing different sports, like Valerie Mulcahy was there, you know, obviously a famous Cork footballer, Nicky Daly, Irish hockey player, like Jackie Hurley was there, Sarah Keane, who's head of the OCI, you know, loads of different people who all just descended on the city for this moment. And it really felt like that. And in fairness, it was Amanda Serrano who highlighted that at the end. And I know, like, when I was watching it, and Rachel Blackmore says this all the time, and she actually liked my tweet in the middle of the night, so she was up watching it, you know, and all these little things. And it didn't feel like, you know, oh, there's two women boxers when you're watching it. And Rachel said that after she won so many of her big races, you don't go, I'm a woman who's won a race. It was just an athlete or two athletes. But then when you took 10 minutes and actually sat back and realised, you know, if it wasn't for Katie Taylor, would this even be happening? Like, would she has changed the sport completely, and so many women have obviously changed the landscape for women's sport.
Can she get Amanda Serrano to Dublin?
I don't think so. We've been discussing this on our WhatsApp group, which is open to anyone who wants to come to the rematch. We can add you in and tell you the plans. But because of the TV Right, so if they have it in Ireland, it would be in the middle of the night, and that's like grandos getting up in the middle of the night to watch it. But they want the American market because that's where the money is, and that's where the subscriptions are for the zone. So the theory now seems to be that it'll be a rematch in September, October time, back in Madison Square Garden again, build it up, get the broadcasting money, because to put on a fight like that, I'd imagine, not that I'm an expert, in Croke Park would cost a huge amount of money. And like, our tickets were €60, by the way. That's all they cost. So like, for us, for people to go to Croke Park to sell 80,000 tickets, like, they'd want to be reasonably priced. So you'd be wondering, is the gate and the cost of putting a show on like that, does that, would you not be better off focusing on the broadcasting?
Is Croke Park for a fight, is it not £140,000, 40,000 people stadium?
I have no idea.
Does it hold in the All-Ireland? It holds 79,000, 80,000. So you fill the stands and then you fill the pitch.
Well, Ruby, funny enough to throw this into the mix, I was at Ed Sheeran last Sunday.
Yeah, and so
that
was
would,
I.
It would, but would that not be similar to a boxing event because you have the ring in the middle and there was still only 83, I think, for Ed Sheeran.
And that was sold out. So it could probably be a health and safety thing.
It was sold out.
It actually, I was there on the Saturday. It really was. Like, it was absolutely
jealous. So I don't think you can use the hill because he wasn't using the hill.
I think it'll be...
All those experts and figure out how we get as many people in to make sure Kate Taylor gets as much money as she possibly can.
I do think it'll be back in New York, though, again, because they... Like, Americans aren't going to watch it at late at night. Mm. So I'd say for the subscriptions and the amount of people. Like, there was a huge interest in it, and it was as many Puerto Ricans there as well. Like, they're not going to come to Ireland in October.
The same way as the Irish were...
Yeah, exactly, So that would be my prediction. But like, I'm not 100% sure. But if she is fighting back there... I mean, I wouldn't mind Vegas either.
Well, here's one for... like, obviously you're talking about the rematch, Marie, and I suppose she's got to a point now where that's her biggest night and she's done everything, literally. How long more will she go on?
I'd say this, like, if she goes and fights her again now, that would be it, because where could she go from it? And like,
you don't ask her at the after party, no?
She actually wasn't there.
What sort of a journalist are you? If that was me now, you'd give me some stick.
Yeah, but see, if that was you now, you'd actually be up there with her because you're way more of a VIP than I am. So you'd be like whisked straight up into the, in behind the red carpet or the red barrier. But I just think that back to New York, probably September, October time.
You'll be there again.
I'll be there again. Absolutely. I couldn't miss it. Like, best experience. I might even bring Eve. You're nice to me now for the next few months. I've got to start opening a little book. And
Game
I'll
on life from
Game
New York.
Game on life in New York. Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth, Alan.
There you go, Ruby.
Yeah, and like, it was really easy to get to, really accessible, like, great crack, like, no trouble. So many people there, and like, just then an unbelievable performance by the two of them. And they... Like, Katie said afterwards, she had to dig really deep, and like, by God, did
she have to dig deep. Over and all, because obviously you spoke about the women's sport, you've championed it for a long time as well, Marie, the developments over the years. Fair play for you making you all going over, and obviously as fans and supporters, it was brilliant.
I said it was like going to Dunn's and Cornell's court, you know what I mean? Like, everywhere you go, it'd be people that you knew kind of going around the corner, like going different things and doing different things. And look, you think going to New York, if you plan it on time, like it's quite accessible. Like, you know, flights aren't crazy dear. You like, tickets €60, like that was the best €60 I ever spent in my life, and there's no bad seats in Madison Square Garden. So like, we were up at the back, but we could, you know, you can see everything and all the screens, and you could see down and I see her in the ring. Like, you didn't miss a thing with, you know, with your cheap seats up the back. Like, it was,
you were blown away.
I was absolutely blown away.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a little bit tired and emotional today because I was, you know, I'm still actually wearing the clothes I travelled in. So straight from the airport in. But it was worth every single penny, and it was the best sporting experience that I have. And as you said, I've seen like Barcelona with Messi scoring those three goals against Liverpool. Like, I've seen some unbelievable matches, been to Roma, been to the Bayern Munich Stadium, like been to so many big sporting events, but nothing has ever even came close to what I saw on Saturday night.
There's one for Ruby, actually, because now that you're on it, and obviously Ruby has done everything in terms of winning everything, but as a fan or as a fan or a supporter, Ruby, have you ever been at an event that has blown you away, something similar like this?
I was behind the goal in the Bernabeu, in the New Camp, when Sheringham and Solskjaer won the European Cup for United.
Oh, wow.
And that was an unbelievable experience, sitting behind the goal. But like, having said that now, for the previous 47 minutes, it was pretty drab. And the Bayern fans were all at the other end. They'd split the new camp in half almost, and the United fans were on one end of it, and it was pretty quiet where we were sitting now all the way up until the two goals, and then it was then it was amazing.
Yeah,
a couple of different ones. That one sticks out in particular. I did think the night in the Aviva that Ireland beat the All Blacks was amazing. I'd love to have been in Chicago when they did, but that was a fabulous atmosphere as well. But you come across them, I suppose, in sport, but you have to have a vested interest too. And when you have a vested interest, like your emotion, Marie, was with Katie Taylor every step of the way, so you had an emotional interest even if you didn't have an emotional contact. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have emotional, when you have new skin in the game or you have emotion in it, I can remember different sporting events that made me emotional. Most of them were horse racing, but I had skin in the game. So
I was the Euros in France. I went over after they beat Italy, remember Robbie Brady's header?
Yeah.
And I went over to the second round match and they took the lead after 90 seconds, but afterwards there was a moment where they came down, the players, they got well beaten in the end 3-1 by France, but there was a moment where, like, the Irish fans, I think, had a block of maybe 6,000 in the corner in like a 65,000 seater stadium, but the players came down and the fans sang down to the players. And you're speaking about emotional, I'm the same, like, obviously from playing and going to matches, you rarely would feel like that, and you'd often look at people and think, really, like, are you crying? And honestly, it was grown men and myself included, and I never felt so emotional after that. So yeah, it does happen, I'm sure, and for people going to big events the whole time. The best place I've ever been is the Crucible. The snooker is the best, the most amazing tournament event. And I say this every year on here, I've been 4 or 5 years, it's absolutely incredible, the Crucible, and what's about to unfold tonight, I can only imagine what the atmosphere will be like.
Yeah, I mean, when you're watching it, the noise, the atmosphere, it's just...
But can I explain...
The silence, Alan.
But this is the point, right? And this is what gets people, and this is what makes it so amazing, is that you can hear a pin drop, right? You're so close, that auditorium makes it look as if there's 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people. I think it only holds between 800 and 900. It's real intimate. You're right down on top of the players. You actually don't have to raise your voice, Ruby, and you could say, oh, Ronnie, I wouldn't go for that one, I think you'll miss it. It's just the most incredible... And telly as well doesn't do it justice, because it looks like they're potting everything, but if you're in that arena and that auditorium, you can feel every moment, every shot, the tension, the drama. And as I say, tonight, what I would give to be in the Crucible Theatre tonight.
So Ronnie led 12-5 overnight. Judd Trump came back this afternoon, won 6 of the 8 frames. It's 14-11 now. He needs what, 4 more, Ronnie O'Sullivan, to equal Stephen Hendry? Will he do it, or is he starting to shake?
Well, he was shaking today. He was brilliant last night, and as you say, he won the session, I think 7-2 last night, went into today with a 7-frame lead. It's looking like it was unassailable at that stage, but to be fair to Judd Trump, he had to come out and win the session today, which he did, 6-2. Could have won it 7-1, to be fair, but he would have taken that at the start of today's play, because he's got himself right back into the match. Ronnie, for the first time in the tournament, looked a bit edgy, a bit nervous. As you said, he's trying to equal Hendry's record. Everybody says he's the greatest, and in my view, he is the greatest, Ruby, but that's the stick that people will always beat him with, that Hendry won 7 and O'Sullivan won 6, so he's mad desperate to equal that. I have to point out as well though, Ruby, and I'm the biggest snooker fan ever, I absolutely love it, yesterday Ronnie O'Sullivan's behaviour was absolutely atrocious towards the referee and undermining it, and it's not the first time. I have the height of respect for him as a snooker player, but I have zero respect for him as a person, because he's totally, the amount of times he's disrespected the game over the years, it's absolutely phenomenal when you think of all the game has given him. But when you just look at, I suppose, the snooker side of things, he is in a very strong position going into it, but I'd love to see Judd Trump win it.
I watched that a couple of times last night and I didn't quite understand what the referee was having the word with Ronnie O'Sullivan for.
Well, initially in the earlier stages of the match, I think it was the 3rd frame, there was a point in the match where basically now the referee, because of the technology again, and we speak a lot about technology in sport, they have a referee basically in the arena beside them, that if you take a shot and you foul and you miss the ball, that the referee and if the other player or the opponent wants you to put you back in and replace the ball, they have a referee literally there to tell them and look at the technology. Now, it's impossible to get it in the right spot, but before a shot was even taken, he was calling Judd Trump over and literally doing the referee's job for him, which initially he should never have done. So then after missing the ball, he was just being so awkward with the referee, who's, I've met the referee, Olivier Martel, he's an absolute gentleman, and he was just being so awkward, and even Dennis Taylor was saying it. And there's an etiquette involved in golf, snooker, horse race and everything, Ruby. He's the most unlikable sports person, and he's probably the best snooker player ever, as I say, and I love him for that side of it. But that was the start of things beginning to fester, and then later on, then he missed the shot, and the camera didn't pick up exactly whether he said something or whether he made a gesture, and he's been known to make gestures as well when he misses shots, and the referee pulled him up on it straight away, and he reacted in a way, literally pointing at the ref, "Don't you start." Now, it put Judd Trump off a little bit, but the referee had to pull him up at the point of where he did it. And I think that's the problem. Like, you have Stephen Hendry in the studio, you have Steve Davis, you have Jimmy White. Now, Eurosport will never call him out because he does work with Eurosport. But for the likes of Stephen Hendry and Steve Davis, yes, he's the best player ever. But for his behaviour, it was absolutely atrocious, and you have to pull him up on it.
Fair enough. I was only asking a question.
In my view, it really annoyed me. It really annoyed me, Ruben.
I didn't know what it was for. I just thought he missed. Like, I was thinking, well, he missed. I thought it was because he lay on the table too long, and maybe there was a chance of him fouling the white ball as it came back or something as technical as that, but obviously it wasn't.
Trump seems to be much more composed now. Will he be able to maintain that throughout the evening?
Well, I think it suited him today because you're looking at the start of the day thinking, I've nothing to lose here, I can just go out. He got off to a good start, which gave him confidence, and he's a confidence player, Murray. And once he got the momentum with him, he obviously got himself back in the match. Now, though, because he feels as though he's back in the match, he'll come under the same pressure as Ronnie the closer it gets to the line. And Ronnie is a good front runner, to be fair. I think the break came at a good time for him because he can go off, compose himself, and now come out. And I suppose if he'd said to Ronnie yesterday, you'd be 14-11 going up into the final session, he probably would have taken that. The way it's transpired, obviously, that he was 7 ahead and now it's back to 3, he might have felt a little bit kind of annoyed over that. But the fact that he's been able to go off 2 or 3 hours, regroup, come back, he's still in prime position. But what I would give to be there and for Trump to beat him, honestly, in some ways I think Ronnie deserves to win it to equal the 7, because as I say, it's unfair that that's the stick that people will beat him, because he is, even Hendry says, look, there's been no one like him, he is the greatest, he's an absolute genius. His behaviour is what irritates me, and I don't like that, and it's not the first time, it's numerous times. There's a way to carry yourself as well as a champion, and he certainly doesn't do that. But if he gets obviously equal in the 7th, he'll be fully deserved because he's been a genius over the years.
Well, that's all going to unfold this evening, but we're going to take a quick break before Alan stays with us to discuss the Premier League.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So I was in New York for the weekend, so I didn't get to see a huge amount of sports. So you're going to have to tell me all about it. I'm used to carrying you on my back, so now I'm going to, roll reversal now.
Don't worry, Marie. Punchestown on Saturday was full of Liverpool fans, so I could tell you exactly what happened to that. Two of the cameramen I was working with actually were Liverpool fans, so they were watching on their phones as we were working. And Keith, they got a goal early, Alan, and Liverpool never looked in doubt, did they?
No, they didn't. And it was a sticky looking fixture on paper, because obviously Newcastle have turned things around with Eddie Howe, got themselves into the top half of the table. They've a bit of momentum with them, obviously, in the last few games at home as well in St James's Park, the crowd behind them. And it did look like a sticky fixture on paper. He made 3 big decisions as well. He left out Trent, Thiago and Salah, which was obviously a huge decision to make. But just typically Jurgen Klopp, no matter what decision he makes a turn to gold, and obviously they got the victory. Good goal by Cade, he took it well, and as you say, once they were ahead, Ruby, they never really looked like being in doubt of conceding.
No, they didn't, but they're still going to need City to slip up somewhere if they're going to win it. And City were rampant against Leeds, and that piles the pressure on Leeds, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely rampant. Yeah, we'll come to the relegation battle, I'm sure, but Leeds are in big, big trouble. I agree with you totally. I never expected Leeds to get anything out of this anyway. I always expected Man City to beat them, as you say, quite comfortably. Liverpool still need a favour somewhere along the line, and I said here last week, the only place that potentially I can see them getting something maybe or slipping up is West Ham or Villa. Obviously Steven Gerrard, we all know the links, he'll be doing everything to get some sort of a victory or a point to help Liverpool. But it does pile the pressure on Leeds, and you look at the result as well yesterday with Everton, Ruby, and Leeds are in big, big bother.
Before we move on from Liverpool, which you already have, but I'm going back, quick word on James Milner, because I did see videos of him and he was so emotional coming off. You'd have to think that could be the end for him now.
Yeah, it's a great one to bring up, Marie, because no one ever speaks about James Milner, and everyone speaks about Klopp and how good of a manager he is. Everyone speaks about Salah and Mane and Firmino and Van Dijk and all the superstars that they have. But one thing where I think Klopp has been absolutely magnificent, in everyone speaks about the recruitment as well, but it's the characters that he brings to the club. And you, like, we don't want to go into the whole Man United thing again, but you equate that to some of the characters involved there. You look at Jordan Henderson, good, solid, honest pros, no trouble, no messing, get on with their job. Mightn't be the best players in the world, but you know what you're getting out of them every week. And they set the tone for everybody else and set the standards. James Milner has been an unbelievable servant to English football over the years, had a brilliant career. He was actually a young lad when I was at Leeds starting off, and they had him earmarked as a potential kind of future star. He's gone on to achieve all that, doesn't drink, great lad, great attitude. That's why he's still playing, I think, 36, 37, is he?
He's 36, I think.
And he came on the other night, and he's so reliable as well. That's the thing. Like, people would have been looking at the team sheet on Saturday, Marie, and thinking, Thiago's not playing, Trent Arnold's not playing, Salah, he's playing Milner. Is that an area where Newcastle might get at them? Got man of the match. He was absolutely outstanding. So dependable and reliable.
So dependable and reliable is right. And who's going to be the more dependable at this end of the season? Arsenal or Spurs? Which one of them? It's there for the taking for one of them, Alan. Arsenal obviously scored. West Ham equalised, got back in front. Kane and Son were on fire against Leicester. But which one of them is going to be more reliable from here on in?
They're probably the two most unreliable clubs ever over there, if you look back the history of football, and certainly in recent times. But you would have to say Arsenal have put themselves in a position now, Ruby, where if they let this slip, they'll be really, really disappointed. And obviously the last, I think, they had a little bit of a blip there where they lost two games, but the last three they've won on the bounce now, and they've responded really, really well, and especially going away to West Ham. Now, I know West Ham had the game in during the week, and they obviously have all eyes on the second leg this coming, I think it's Thursday. So it was an opportunity, a good opportunity to play West Ham, but you still have to go and get the victory. So they've given themselves a great opportunity. There's only four games to go. You look at the fixtures that they have. We mentioned a minute ago about Leeds, obviously fighting for their lives, but you wouldn't fancy Leeds going to the Emirates. Then the big one is Spurs are playing Arsenal week after, and I think it's going to come down to that. If Spurs, obviously you have to, if they're aiming for that fourth place, they have to go to the Emirates and win. The fact that they have a 2-point gap already, I can't see them slipping up. Sorry, the game is at home actually for Spurs, but they have to beat them that day, Ruby. But you just wouldn't know, because these two clubs, just when you think they have it nailed, they go and let you down. So it's hard to call, but it will come down to that game in a couple of weeks.
It seems crazy that Chelsea are playing the way they're playing, and they just have that third spot, and it's like they're not going to lose it.
Yeah, you mentioned something a few weeks ago, Marie, and you were 100% right, and I said to you on the night, oh, I'm not so sure, I don't think it'll affect them. The uncertainty around the club is absolutely affecting them, and they're in no man's land at the moment in terms of they can't win the league, they're obviously third, they can't drop out of the Champions League places, there's fellas' contracts are up, Rudiger looks like he's going to Real Madrid, there's a couple of other lads' contract situation, I think they're going to let them run down, the Lukaku thing hasn't worked out, so there's a lot of uncertainty, not just off the pitch, but certainly on the pitch as well, and Tuchel cuts a very kind of forlorn, frustrated figure at the moment, and to be fair to them, if you look at, I think, their last six games, their form, it's so indifferent, and you just wouldn't associate that with a Tuchel team, or with a squad as strong as Chelsea. It has to be down to what's going on off the pitch.
Well, they can drop out. They have four games left. They're on 66 points. They do need to get to 71, maybe 72 to guarantee themselves. Now, the four games they have are Wolves at home, Leeds away, Leicester at home, and Watford at home. You'd imagine they'll manage to get 5-6 points out of those games, Alan.
Yeah, absolutely, Ruby. And it depends then on Arsenal and Spurs, who we just spoke about winning all their games probably to overtake them. You would fancy them to get at least 1 or 2 points, or one win maybe it'll do with in those fixtures coming up. And then, of course, they have the FA Cup final. So they need to get their house in order going into that, because if they go into that game in the current run of form that they're in, or if their attitude is not right against Liverpool, it'll get destroyed, because we all speak and know how good Liverpool are.
Everton, though, I mean,
Everton.
What a shocking result, really. And for Pickford as well to be man of the match. I was on social media at the time, and I never know whether people like Pickford or dislike him, and I actually still don't know.
They don't like Pickford.
They liked him, though, at the weekend.
I don't like Pickford. And Odadumri, absolutely. Well, in terms of him as a goalkeeper, he's the England number one, so he's obviously doing something right. It's just, I think, sometimes we spoke earlier about maybe the attitude. He's barking and roaring and shouting and coming out and screaming, sometimes needlessly. You always feel as though there's a mistake in him as well. Certainly I do at times, but you'd speak to Gareth Southgate and he'd say, look, he's never let us down and he's very reliable when he plays for England, hence him being the number one. But to be fair to him yesterday, whatever the indifference towards him from the fans at Everton, he was absolutely outstanding and he got them to 3 points yesterday. There was one save in particular, you probably saw it, the highlights, Ruby, where it hit the post from Mount and he obviously was at full stretch trying to save that. Then it rebounds back over to the other side and he has to get up and sprint back. Something that goalkeepers would do on a daily kind of part of the routine, up and down and all that kind of stuff. It's rare that you would have to do with something like that in a match. He had to do it and he was called upon and he ran back across the goals and as it was reversed back into the corner, pulls off a brilliant save. So he got them to 3 points yesterday, much needed and badly needed 3 points. It's given themselves a chance now again to have a game in hand on Leeds and Burnley. You would think the momentum is with them. Their home form is very good, the away form is disastrous, so that's where the question mark will lie with them. But Ruby mentioned it a few moments ago about the pressure being put on Leeds. I think Leeds are in big bother now.
They are, and Leeds have to go to the Emirates to play Arsenal, and then Chelsea are coming up the road to play them. Like, of the teams, Burnley, Leeds and Everton, alright, Everton have five games, but Chelsea look to have the toughest run in. They've got the two big teams to play. Burnley have Spurs and Everton have Arsenal on the last day of the season, but Leeds have to play both of them.
They do, yeah, and that's going to be the problem. Now, the only thing with the time I think they're playing Leeds, it might be around the time of Chelsea in the cup final. He might rest people, and he can get fortunate with situations like that come the end of the season, Ruby, in terms of team selections, because other teams, I mentioned West Ham obviously having one eye on the semi-final, Leicester in a similar predicament in their semi-final, so you could be fortunate around those times as to when you play them. But just the fixtures in general, Arsenal, Chelsea, even Brighton will be a tricky game. Did a good win at the weekend over Wolves, winning 3-0. And Brentford, who have been in great form, is their away fixture on the last day. I wouldn't exactly call that easy either. So Jesse March has a big job on his hands. We all felt when Bielsa obviously left that they might be in a bit of bother, a bit of trouble. They'll be dependent on others' results as well. But I still think it'll come down to Everton and Leeds. Burnley, I think, will get out of it. And it's amazing, Ruby, the amount of people that said when they sacked Sean Dyche, and I was one included, saying, forget about it, they shouldn't have sacked him. The bounce that they've gotten has been unbelievable. And again, getting the late win at the weekend, I think they've picked up 3 wins and a draw since they sacked Dyche. Incredible form.
You know, like, people often talk about concussion and the delayed reaction to it. And I had plenty of concussions and I'm always questioning my memory. But we definitely had this conversation last Monday, Alan, about Sean Dyche and the bounce and the whole lot. So maybe heading the ball might have been worse than the jockeys getting slapped off the ground.
Possibly, Ruby. Yeah, well, I think it's been proved over the years. And Chris Sutton is certainly an advocate of stuff like that from players from years ago. But the whole Dyche thing, to be fair to Burnley, they're the ones that'll come out. Whoever was brave enough to make that decision, the board members and the chairman, I thought they were bonkers when they made it at the time. But they're after picking up 3 wins, 10 points out of 12, getting themselves, like, they're actually ahead of Leeds and Everton now. It's incredible, really, when you think where they were 2 or 3 weeks ago. So they've given themselves an unbelievable chance. And I do think now that the momentum that's with them, they'll get out of it. It'll be Leeds or Everton.
Big game tonight. Man U and Brentford.
Massive. There's only one place I'll be tonight,
sure.
And that's the Crucible. It's all about the Crucible tonight, Ruby.
Does it feel like it just doesn't matter anymore, Alan, now?
Yes. Ah, no, it does matter.
Ruby says yes.
Does it, yeah. Well, when you look at the game, Thursday night is a prime example. They're playing Chelsea now. They should have been beaten. But, like, Roy Keane obviously was having a go and he's kind of run out of things to say. But he's certainly right even about the likes of bringing Mata on and waving to the crowd almost like a goodbye. Matic, the stuff he was saying in the after-match interview about, oh, 5 years I've been here, it's been great. Yeah, and you're kind of like, great. What's been great about it? And
The money, Alan.
Yeah, look, Man United, we've spoken about it numerous times. They're in rag order and we all know that. So much is dependent on this manager coming in trying to change things. But it won't happen anytime soon and we're going to have to suffer for a while yet, Ruby, I think.
I think we are, Alan.
Okay.
We'll suffer together.
A bit like me right now, listening to ye.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, imagine if you actually did consume alcohol. Imagine the mess you'd be in right now.
I wouldn't be here.
In New York for the weekend. Yeah,
I wouldn't be here.
You're just so lucky you're teetotal.
I like you so much that I said, you know what, now I'll get to see the lads on.
And did you love the chat?
I had a great time. Great
chat. It was a great chat, yeah.
Bringing the memories. Okay, break time.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Alan, there was lots happening in the League of Ireland as well. And before we get to that, was in the papers today that Shamrock Rovers boss Stephen Bradley has emerged as Lincoln City's number one target. And him, along with his coaching staff, could make the move as early as this week.
Wow. I didn't hear this, Marie. Sorry.
There you go.
Thanks.
I've got a bit of breaking news for you.
That's a bombshell, yeah. I was only travelling up. I was down home the weekend because I was working at the game on Friday evening in the showgrounds. I didn't hear that now, but that's... It doesn't surprise me, really, because... When you have someone like that who's obviously in the shop window and being successful at such a big club like Shamrock Rovers, and he has been successful, Stephen Bradley, you're always kind of maybe being earmarked for a potential move upwards. Now, whether people think Lincoln is a move up, of course it is. You're going over to England where there's a major industry compared to what's happening here, and he will want to further his career and progress his career. So I'm sure if it's an option, he'll absolutely be interested. But that's the first I heard of him, Marie. But watch this space, I suppose.
Yeah, and Stephen McPhail is apparently on the ticket with them as well, and Glenn Cronin. So
be... Yeah, and that's the norm, really, in football, that when you have a little team like that and people that you trust and that are around you, you normally tend to bring them with you as assistants or part of your coaching staff as well. And Glenn Cronin has worked closely with Stephen Bradley and has Stephen McPhail over the last 3-4 years where they have been successful. They'll be very disappointed with the result on Friday. They slipped up massively against Sligo Rovers. They were in total control of the game, just didn't manage it very well in the second half, and Sligo got an equaliser. But that's, yeah, you've kind of caught me off guard there. That's interesting.
Well, there you go.
Do you know where Lincoln City is?
No, do you?
I'm assuming it's in Lincoln.
Yeah,
if
Lincoln.
If it is in Lincoln, moving from Dublin to Lincoln could be a fair shock for them all.
It could be a shock, but Ruby, again, as I say, like, it's opportunities.
Stepping stones.
Yeah, League
Stepping
One,
stone.
I think they are, and... he'll want to better his career, further his career. If he feels as though it's somewhere where you can do that, yeah. But it would be a big move. I agree. He's at the best club here. They're winning everything. They're in prime position in terms of the squad they've built up. They'll be favourites for most competitions here. Whilst there's a pressure on that, you'd much rather be in that position than one of the mid-table clubs here. But if there's a chance to better his career, I'm sure he'd be interested.
Lisa Fallon, soccer analyst with FIFA Now and regular pundit on RT, was also on the trip. So she was telling me all the results on Friday night and was very surprised that Derry City beat St. Pat's 4-0.
Yeah, I was surprised. As I say, we were working in the showgrounds, but we were picking up the scores as they were coming in. And by all accounts, Derry were absolutely magnificent in the first half. Again, they had a little blip a couple of weeks back, but they've responded by scoring 11 goals in the last two matches. That's some response, Marie. And whatever about beating UCD last week, because everybody's beaten UCD, to go to Inchicore and win 4-0 is a bit of a statement in itself. They put some 3 points clear back ahead of Shamrock Rovers because they slipped up. And that's an absolutely unbelievable result for them.
So, Alan, if you were in Sligo the weekend, did you go and watch Sligo Roscommon yesterday?
No. You know, I was bowling with my kids.
Barry Cahill is with us now. And I'm just going to stick on the theme now of America, because Mossy Quinn was on my flight home, Barry, but he wasn't at the flight. He was on his holidays, the flight. He was on his holidays in Florida, but he was raging he wasn't there.
Yeah, I think Mossy was down in South Florida for a week or two with the family. Long overdue holiday that obviously they didn't have, I think, for the last couple of years, given COVID. But generally, when Mossy's going to the States, I usually try and tag along with him, but didn't get the invite this year.
We were laughing because everybody was looking absolutely wrecked, sitting there waiting for their flights. And then Mossy strolls by, glowing, like, you know, and still looking like he could go out and kick a few points in Croke Park. He doesn't seem to be aging at all. But anyway, enough about Mossy Quinn. I'm just keeping my America connections going as we
You're
get through the air.
You're just dropping as many names as you can here.
I'm telling you, it was like being in Dunn's here in Ireland. It was just meeting everybody as you went along. The big shock, though, was Derry and Tyrone this weekend, Barry. That was worthy of a flash notification on my phone. Huge news and a huge scoreline as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Derry have been making really good strides in the last year or two under Rory Gallagher, getting promoted out of Division 3 and going very close to getting up to Division 1 this year. But I thought, given the fact that, you know, Derry hadn't won an Ulster Championship match for 6 or 7 years, and you're playing the All-Ireland champions in their home venue, I think we felt that Derry would give it a go, but certainly that a victory might be out of reach. But it was a phenomenal performance from them. Within the first 5-10 minutes, you knew straight away that this Derry team were highly organised, energetic, motivated for the win, and the complete opposite with Tyrone. They were very flat. very little fluid to their play and looked very lackluster and very disciplined as well. You know, Derry really got under their skin and did everything that you'd expect from a team trying to beat All-Ireland champions in their home patch. But it was a very well-deserved victory, and I don't think the red cards even had an impact on it. There was only one team that was going to win that game, gone by the first 10-15 minutes of the match.
The contrast in the interviews after between Fergal Lohan and Rory Gallagher was incredible. Rory looked so proud, Fergal looked so dejected, and he said they didn't turn up properly on the day. Why didn't they?
Yeah, probably a combination of reasons. I mean, teams are sometimes a little bit sluggish after winning All-Ireland. They had a mediocre league. But I think a big issue for Tyrone at the moment has been the fact that a number of players have stepped away from the panel. So I would feel that the standard of training and maybe A versus B games have dropped a little bit. They're still relying on the same 16, 17 players that won the All-Ireland for them last year. And from a managerial perspective, say last Christmas and going into this year, they would have been looking for the sort of fringe players on the panel to really push the starting team and try and look to get places themselves. So I think that is probably a disappointing aspect to it. But look, Tyrone aren't gone. They have 5 weeks to regroup. They're certainly not out of the All-Ireland race yet, but they've a lot of soul-searching to do and a lot of homework to do over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks if they're to try and get back up to the level that they were last year.
Arguably, Barry, they haven't really turned up at all this year yet. Like, we haven't even seen even a shadow of what they were able to bring to the table last year. So it's going to be a huge 5 weeks. But a lot of credit has to go to Rory Gallagher as well and what he's done with that team and
definitely,
how he's able to build it. And not overnight. It took him a bit of time to get it together, to establish their way of playing, and then to be able to rack up 118 as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Rory is a top coach. I mean, he's been involved in a number of counties now, with Donegal under Jim McGuinness, and then with the Fermanagh job and managing Donegal as well. So very experienced, and he's, you know, he lives and breathes GAA, and he's very much a modern day innovative coach. And it was great to see his personality coming out in the game yesterday as well. He's very energetic on the sideline, given what you see with some GAA managers now who are very cool and calculated on the sideline. So he was very much up for the game, and it was a very big win for him and the Derry group. And the thing about Derry at the moment that I like is that they seem to be a very cohesive, you know, collective spirit type within the group at the moment, which is something that wasn't the case for a number of years. He had a lot of good quality Derry footballers that didn't commit to the county, but they seemed to be all together at this particular time. And you know, 118 was a very high score to get, and I think 113 came from the full forward line. So you know, your inside players doing what they're meant to and racking up those scores. But they seem to have a really nice balance about the team at the moment, and certainly the funny thing is, though, that psychologically there'll be a bit of work to be done in the next week or two going into the Monaghan game, because they would have been targeting that Tyrone game for the last 6-7 months, and now that they got the win, you know, the game against Monaghan will be very much 50-50. So you know, they'll have to make sure that they back up yesterday's performance and don't get too carried away.
Monaghan were involved in the Euro game in Ulster, where they beat Down by 23 points to 2-7, and Seamus McEnany said there was more positives than negatives. I didn't really see any negatives from Monaghan, did you?
No, it was a very comfortable victory. I mean, they're full of confidence, especially after the way the league finished up and getting that victory over Dublin on the last day. It was an expected result, to be honest, Ruby. I think Monaghan, you know, they have managed to develop their game plan, and they're not as reliant on Conor McManus as they've been in previous years. But on the other side of it, Down just seem to be a bit of a mess at the moment. There's a lot of stuff going on within the county and the county board, and they don't seem to be pulling in the right direction. So I think it was a relatively comfortable win for Monaghan. But I think that the next game, the semi-final against Derry, is something that everyone will be looking forward to.
We've been talking about Dublin with you, Barry, now so much for the last few months, and in all of Desi Farrell's post-match interviews, he kept referring to the championship and, you know, putting a lot more importance on it than the league, as everybody does. And the expectation was that when the championship came around, that things would all come together for Dublin. Did you see some of that against Wexford at the weekend?
I did, Marie. Now, you got to put it into perspective. They were playing against a team who finished, you know, third or fourth in Division 4. So I think that context has to come into it. But the thing that I liked about Dublin is they started out of the blocks very well. A lot of high energy, a lot of really good play. And I think the players up front in particular, their shot selection was excellent. And, you know, it wasn't a case that they built up a 6 or 7 point lead and then paced themselves for the rest of the match. they actually played a game against a weaker Leinster opposition the way that they did it for a number of years under Jim Gavin. They actually kept going for the full 70, 75 minutes and were relentless, really. Even the guys coming off the bench were really good. But I suppose the big thing for me was Conor Callaghan. We spoke a bit about him during the National League and how his absence had been felt. He's a guy who had very little football with Dublin, hadn't played, I suppose, in the guts of maybe 7 or 8 months since the All-Ireland semi-final against Mayo last year. But he hit the ground running at the weekend, scored 1-6 from play. And I think the big thing with Conn is that he does have that killer instinct. He's a guy who turns down point opportunities and he's very keen to get the goals. And I think he's going to be the key player for Dublin this year because there's no such thing as giving a bad ball into Conor Callaghan. He's going to win it, whether it's high, low, into the D or into the corner. And he can cause opposition defences a lot of bother. And I think for any team that does end up playing Dublin over the next few weeks, it's going to be difficult to have six very good defenders coming up against those six Dublin forwards because there's a lot of talent on show and there's a lot of guys who can win a game for you.
Do you need an extra good midfielder as well to keep a stranglehold on Brian Fenton?
Yeah, but Brian Fenton was back to his best there at the weekend, kicking 4 or 5 points from play. And I suppose the thing, Ruby, as well with this Dublin group, I mean, it's new territory for a lot of them. You know, it's 7 years since they were challenging for Sam Maguire and not being the holders of Sam Maguire. So, you mean, you'd like to think that these guys will be highly motivated, you know, a bit of a chip on their shoulder, given the fact the way they exited the championship last year and the way the league went. So, it'll be interesting to see how they get on over the next few weeks. But I think Saturday was a start, given the fact that they're playing the Division 4 team. But I think that Dublin will step it up another notch or two over the next few weeks.
Yeah, Meade are next. Obviously, Jack O'Connor scored that goal in about 4.5 seconds flat that set Meade on the road. But will Meade have preferred Westmeath in the draw like Kildare got?
Yeah, I think they would. I think it was a good draw for Dublin and a good draw for Kildare as well. I think Kildare will be actually thankful that it's going to be in Croke Park as well, because I think for Glenn Ryan and his management team, they'll want to get their players game time in Croke Park and getting victories under their belt if they are to challenge for Leinster titles or to try and get into the latter stages of the All-Ireland series. So I think for me, they would certainly had a better chance if it was outside of Croke Park. It might have been I don't think the result would have changed, but I think maybe the scoreline might have been a bit tighter. So I think certainly Dublin and Kildare will be favourites for the Leinster semi-final, certainly.
What about down in Cusick Park in Ennis, Limerick beating Clare after extra time 4-1 on penalties? Do you think that's a fair way to decide a championship game, Barry?
It's a tricky one, Marie. I certainly agree with the fact that the game should be finished on the particular day. I think replays have caused havoc in recent years with the inter-county activity and also has affected club stuff as well. So, and usually there's a bit of an anti-climax feeling when a game finishes in a draw that has to go to a replay. The penalty shootout, it feels a little bit soccery, to be honest. Maybe there is something that they can introduce with like a 40-minute free or something like that. So it's probably something that the GAA would certainly look at. But I think obviously big excitement in that particular game. It'll be interesting to find out if either sets of players were practicing penalties over the last week or two. It's something to maybe look into, and certainly for some teams they probably need to do a bit of practice themselves just in case it does go to that stage. But it certainly was great for the people that were at the game. Obviously the game wasn't live itself, but it was very interesting from that perspective.
Barry, can you please explain soccery?
Well,
you leave our game alone now. You leave our game alone.
Yeah, it does look a little strange, to be honest. You know, guys going up and hitting penalties, 5-6 guys maybe taking penalties. You'd like to see maybe a real Gaelic football skill coming into it from that side of things. So that's what I'm looking at. You certainly don't have penalties in the hurling when it goes to a shootout.
Barry, thank you so much. We will check in with you again next week. It is now time to turn our attention to hurling. Niall Moran is with us on the line. And Alan Cawley has hung around. And you know there's something big to talk about if Alan Cawley stays in the studio for the hurling chat. And Niall, that is that handshake that everybody saw. It went global, I have to say, between Brian Cody and Henry Shefflin. What did you think?
Imagine the outpouring of emotion then. Look, number one, who am I to pass judgment on what was going through the heads of two of the greatest people who have ever set foot on a hurling pitch? Look, I'm not going to cast judgment. I just give a penny for the thoughts of both, and no doubt their honourable thoughts, and whatever, if there was any indignation in it, I'm sure it will be resolved in the meantime. But
Cody and Sheffield on the line. I just think you're talking about Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor rematch. I think Chris said for the two of them.
The undercard.
The undercard, yeah, no, it's a super altogether. And look, it's just amazing for Cody in his 24th year of management. He hates losing. He hates losing. And one thing about him is when he's on your team and he has that Kilkenny team now, that's all he cares about. And whether you won 9 or 10 All-Irelands in the past from once they're not part of his team right now, it doesn't come into his thinking. And that's just testament again to the man, like, you know.
Again, in the Leinster final, Niall. Which of the two teams seems to be on the more upward trajectory at the minute? Galway obviously started with the draw against Wexford at a big win last week. Kilkenny have been creeping away again. Which of the two is making the most progress?
You would argue, I suppose, that Galway probably have looked to have a little bit more in them. I suppose the kind of win came on yesterday and he's probably like wasn't his full self and he's probably ultimately the difference. But Kilkenny, Ruby, and I know, that's cliche and I'm not giving you a definitive answer, but their ability to kind of stay in games, even like yesterday was another example of a game that they were well and truly outclassed for a major part of it. Yet when you look at the scoreboard, there's 3 points in it, time nearly up. And what happened in Cork after against Cork, they go and repeat the trick. And the only difference being this time is that the referee added on another 30 seconds. So like they're two very, very good teams. Are either of them capable of winning an All-Ireland? I don't particularly think so just yet. And I suppose credit to Henry Shefflin there, like he has integrated a number of new players in that Kilkenny team, or in that Galway team. And I suppose, look, that takes time just to bed in yet, like, but yeah, they're two, look, it'll be an intriguing battle if they do come to play each other again. But don't lose Dublin out of it, there's a couple of games to go in that championship, yes, and it'll be very, very interesting for the couple of weeks up.
Should there be concerns in Kilkenny over TJ Reid's form, do you think, Noel?
I thought it was strange. Now, I didn't see the game live. I watched it back last night as it happened to be in Thurles yesterday. But it's strange to take off a guy of that ilk even at half time. And he hadn't a whole pile played since the All-Ireland Club Championship. So whether there was an injury concern or whatever else, but I know on my team, I'd leave DJ on all day, every day because he was still produced those couple of moments of magic. But again, I suppose that's one thing about Brian Cody. He's never had, he's never had any problem in kind of removing the marquee players. And I'd still expect to see TJ back the next day, and I still think there's a couple of twists left in TJ 40 years out.
Obviously, there was a couple. You mentioned Dublin; they did beat Westmeath yesterday, and Westmeath are most certainly making progress. But Laois got another one of these all merciful hidings. I mean, Wexford 6-21 to 12 points. I know you keep saying teams have to play games to get better, but can losing by that much be doing anyone any good?
The wheels look to off the wagon. It's so hard to take those couple of beatings. And like yesterday, I think what maybe 3 points in play, like that's 70 minutes hurling, that's not on. And John, so the argument would be made against Wexford that they probably left them off the hook maybe in the first half. So does that do them any good? They're better off being there, Ruby. The only question is, will they survive it this year? Because with due respect to Westmeath, they seem to have a lot more momentum going for them. They've had a lot better performances for a lot longer in matches. And is it maybe a case that Laois are just saying, hey, we've one match to win, that's against Westmeath, and that did kind of played that trick last year and it kind of paid off for them. So it doesn't do anyone any good. Like, but again, I know there's a couple of injuries there as well, and they can't afford to carry those injuries. But look, that's the more teams we need competing with Liam McCarthy, the better. And look, some years along the road, you're going to take those beatings. So look, you just hope that so as before, I know there's a great win in the minor there. At the weekend, so like that's a positive green shoot from as well. Like
when you look at Munster, obviously Cork went. Dennis Clare beat them, but the Cork team, and there was a bit of criticism of them last night on the television about nerves, lacking passion. To me, did they even look like they're enjoying themselves, the Cork players?
Yeah, I thought that was a cop out of a statement from Kieran Kingston, to be honest, about being nervous. I have huge respect for him. I think he's a phenomenal guy in his second turn there. I suppose to be fair to him, he carried out the changes that we're calling for. They were looking for Kieran Joyce at six, they got it, they got Mark Coleman in the midfield. I just thought maybe some of their marquee players and Mark Coleman and Dan's given in that, they just were way, way off the gesture. And they needed to lead from the front, and unfortunately didn't get their hands on the ball to lead from the front. And there seemed to be kind of a general malaise in terms of how they tackled us, how they tracked. And it just, there was that air, Ruby, showing yourself there after 4 or 5 minutes, you could just feel it, you could just sense it. They were getting turned over, puckers weren't going to hand. And look, we've been in that position here many times, and sometimes you just cannot wait for the year to be over. And
you try and fool yourself going into it to say, yeah, we're up for the game and we're at the peak of our powers, and you're doing everything to try and fool yourself. The minute you're on onto the pitch, and after 2 or 3 minutes, the ass falls out of it, and that unfortunately looks to be the way for the Cork at the moment, and that's very, very disappointing given both being the league final, being the Ireland final. But again, in the same breath, at some point you're going to have to start giving credit to Clare, and that was a Clare team who should have beaten the Master in the Gaelic Grounds, and the Clare team with both, three guys, Shane Lamb, Peter Duggan and Dave Sterling, now back in tow, and they have made an enormous difference. All three of them yesterday were brilliant, and look, you can do all the training in the world, but nothing beats having an extra person coming back into it and improve the team, and in Clare's case it's three.
It, as a Clare person, obviously, it's lovely to see Brian Lohan getting that kind of adulation from the fans, and you just feel like his hard work is starting to pay off, Noel.
Yeah, you're talking about the handshake there between Cody and Shefflin. I think there was a picture of a hug between Brian Lohan and Pat Searles. Jesus, if words could speak there, but nobody deserves it more than Brian Owen, and look, he's loyal to everything that has been there through all his life, and I suppose he's that kind of loyalty, that kind of passion. But the one word I personally sum up that performance by Clare yesterday was just courage. They showed immense courage in how they attacked from the back. They showed immense courage in how they went to tackle from the front. They just went for it. They really, really went for it. They left nothing behind, and I suppose that kind of brings back memories of Brian Owen coming out for a ball ahead of the full forward, not afraid to make a mistake, and ultimately probably the difference between the two teams. One team had the courage or conviction, they went for it, and the other team, they thought they had the courage to, and ultimately they didn't, they never went for it.
Well, there was two red cards in the game, and the referee indicated in both cases that it was because of a hurdle being swung, but on reflection and replay it didn't appear to be that way. Now, the lads on the telly last night were of the opinion that the first one would definitely be overturned, probably the second one, but is there a case maybe to take action against the fella that's taking the dive as well, if you're going to let the guy off that didn't swing the hurdle? Should the action be going the other way?
I mean, if that's strong words to say someone took a dive, like you say that John Conlon took a dive, or
if the hurdle wasn't swung is what I meant. I'm not trying to say it's
again, that's the laws of gamesmanship, the ladder laws, maybe hit the ground. Look, again, there wasn't a whole pile in it. By and large, it was a very, very clean game. You know, there probably was an incident where Peter Duggan took a strike of a hurley over right me there after 20 minutes, and there was nothing done in front of the umpire. I know there was an intention drawn on us, but look, I thought it was a clean game. I think he'd get carried away. I thought there were two, the referee in general did quite a decent job of the match, but there was definitely nothing in either defending off. In real time, there was definitely nothing in them. And look, I think the next week we'll be talking about something else, but I don't think it's anything to be making any noise about.
Go on, I was just going to mention
Tony Kelly. No, that's absolutely fair enough. I was only asking the question. You could definitely mention Tony Kelly.
Yeah. Was he good, Niall?
Tony Kelly, yeah. Tony was Tony, but I suppose the biggest difference here, Marie, is Clare put up four forwards that got 3 points or more. There's another couple that got 2 points. It's just, that's the one thing. The pressure has been taken off him, and like, having a guy like Shane Lamb there beside him, he's offloads the ball, his work rate, he's absolutely savage. Ryan Taylor fell into that category there as well yesterday, and look, I know the Clare fans, you had a good weekend. I know they were resting. My lovely Rosa Clare was, they were rattling and coming down here in a few pubs on the way down from Newport. So Clare bandwagon is definitely up and rolling, and it's interesting now in Saturday night week. It should be a good night, and then it's from the Limerick lads coming to meet you. So look, that'll be interesting. But isn't it great to have kind of two neighbours really going toe-to-toe, and it's made the Munster Championship very interesting.
Yeah, it really has. Niall Moran, thank you so much for joining us. I've got all the hurling information that I needed anyway after the weekend, so I appreciate that. I actually think I've got all the sports information now that I needed after my weekend away.
I think the GA is going a bit soft. There's a soccery, diving and hurling and all sorts. You're going soft, lads.
Getting brave over there now, Alan. Turning you off on that microphone. Ruby, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Cheers, Marie.
Alan, thank you so much for coming in.
I'm sure you'll sleep tonight, Marie.
Oh, I absolutely will. Tara, I actually have to get up in the morning because I'm dropping the lads to the airport because they're going
Crucible
to the Liverpool Villarreal game.
Are you?
Oh, yeah. I'll be up now dropping them out for 6 o'clock. We're just set up a sports travel agency.
No.
Tara Kumar is up next.
RTE. 2FM.
On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.